Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on. Bigger. We've done that thing! Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. He was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take him, Bowson. I mean that. Take him.
Well, welcome all again. There were a few times, Andrew, not many, when I was grateful that we were on the radio.
Yes.
This is an occasion I'm grateful we're simply podcasting after a fairly fluid and liquid day yesterday.
Yes, well, happy birthday, sir.
Thank you, Andrew.
That is today,
yes.
St. George's Day,
and
patron saint of England.
Yeah, we don't make much of a fuss
Shakespeare's
of St. George.
Birth date it is. And death date.
Correct. And
there you
only
go.
Know that because every year I tell you.
Well, I only know that because I know it. It's the truth of the matter.
But a little delicate. My name is Richard Keys.
His name is Andrew Gray.
And the name of the podcast, very simply, is Keys and Gray. Now you've found us. If you're a regular and you're enjoying us, please tell your mates. Mm-hmm. We'd be very grateful for that. You can get in touch with us at Keys and Gray, and Keys and Gray on Instagram and Twitter. Right.
Right.
Is there anywhere else to start?
I know. What kind of week has it been? What's the subject today? What are you going to start with? I often ask myself that when you come up here on a Friday, and I think, well, I wonder what you've got this week. I think it's a fair idea.
Well, I think we've got... we've got phase two, haven't we?
Yeah.
My mind, Andy, has turned... After an awful lot of noise, and I understand, I really do, I get it. But I'm slightly concerned that the noise has been generated into mob rule. And I think we need to address that, and quite quickly.
Would you class it as mob rule, would you?
Well, Solskjaer, I'm looking, I suppose the word comes to mind, I've just turned to the mail.
Uh-huh.
Solskjaer and Matic confront the mob who turned up at training yesterday.
What, 25 of them?
Yeah, allowing for a little bit of...
It doesn't constitute a mob, does it?
A generous description,
yes,
by the newspapers. But yes, I mean, seeing red here, back page of the Mirror, United and Arsenal hit by ESL fallout. Yeah, okay, I repeat, I understand, I get it, but I don't think it's actually very helpful now. And you've just got to think on to a point whereby if... Manchester United fans, and it won't happen, but were they to force out the Glazers, if Stan Kroenke were to be delivered a very strong message by Arsenal fans...
And, that's not going to happen.
And if Liverpool's John Henry...
that's not going to happen.
No, but were it, where are the replacements?
Yeah, who has £1 billion for each of these teams?
Who would want to put that sort of money into a football club without the knowledge of there being a return?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people, I've said it many times, the one that always comes to mind, Bob Lord at Burnley, the local butcher.
Oh, yeah, I remember Bob.
Well, Louis Edwards at Manchester United was in the same trade. These guys can't own football clubs anymore. The world's changed. It's a huge commitment.
Of course it is.
And nobody comes in it not to make money. That we have to understand. That's the start point.
Yeah.
And that money generates the multi-millions that go on players when you purchase them, and then what you have to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a supporter of an English Premier League club wouldn't encourage their owners to go out today if they could and buy a £100 million centre forward if you could find him.
Yeah,
I the money still has to come in from somewhere, and this is what
it
I don't
does.
Think is understood clearly.
No, the game has changed, and it probably started with us in 1992 when the fabric of the game and how it was perceived changed. And people started earning money, and suddenly a TV deal that was worth, what was it, £35 million a year from BBC and ITV, maybe?
Oh, not that.
Not even that?
Not that.
Suddenly became worth £350 million a year. Now, even if it was 35, that's a 10 times fold, 10 times more. Now it's probably 10 times again, 20 years later, £3.5 billion. It's huge money, and to buy a club, like when Bob Lawt had his club, or these local people, businessmen took the clubs over, they didn't put money into the club, they just ran it.
Mm.
They ran it, and occasionally, you know, if they had to dip into their pocket to buy a player or fund that, they would get their money back through time if they were lucky. But that can't happen now. You can't buy a club for £1 billion and then set out to pay 500,000 a week, 100 million for a player, and expect just to put your hand in your pocket, throw that money at the club and say, well, I don't mind. If I don't get that back, it doesn't matter.
No.
That's not going to happen. No. And I do think, listen, the one thing that's come out of this, football will move forward. When this dies, when this settles, and I am glad it hasn't happened, certainly in the format it was perceived to be happening, I am glad it hasn't happened. And I know there are a lot of different reasons for it, and I am glad football reared up. And everyone sort of came together. But don't be mistaken, I don't think, that this has gone away for good. It hasn't.
No.
It hasn't. You only have to listen to the noises from Barcelona and Real Madrid since. They're not giving up on this.
Well, it's something we've discussed on Be In Sports, yeah. and this is our first opportunity for others who care to listen. Mm-hmm. The statement that Nasser Al-Khelaifi,
yes,
the president of Paris Saint-Germain, our governor of,
yep,
Be In Sports, the chairman, yep, put out, made reference to that. He was very strong. I don't want to be part of it. I don't want to be part of any change unless it's through UEFA.
Correct.
But there requires to be change. Now, he's subsequently, in the week that we've watched this extraordinary development come and go, been appointed as the chairman of the European Clubs Association. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the next 6 months are absolutely critical for the future of football, because let me ask you this. In what other industry could the hundreds of millions that already are generated be pissed away in the manner that it, mm-hmm, is?
Mm-hmm.
Arsene Wenger, in the time you were away, Andy, was here with us,
yeah,
and said, I put it to him, has the bubble burst? Because, you know, I'm of that opinion it has.
Yeah, me too.
The bubble has burst. And Wenger said, yes. And so what's the answer, Arsene? He said, well, what has to happen now is that players have to understand there isn't the money anymore.
I agree with him.
And so, therefore, we can't pay them
anymore.
Him. Now, Nasser, I think, has to get people together and come up with a strategy which immediately, if you got Europe's top clubs around a table, everybody would walk away from and try and find a way to get around it. If for instance, you said, okay, we'll have a pay cap.
Yeah.
The first man out the door would do is try and find a way around it.
Yeah, yeah, of course he would.
But 272 million out of the door on agents' fees from the Premier League, mm-hmm, last year.
Yeah.
This is madness.
Madness. Madness. Madness.
So that's for me where the immediate change has to come. And if we all believe that we're in this for the betterment now of the game, then we have to find a strategy and stick to it.
Yes.
The problem is, I mean, look at this one. Čeferin, Agnelli is a snake, says his daughter's UEFA godfather. I mean, he said, you know, in this article here, look, you know, we've all moved on, you know, we have to, this isn't personal. except with Agnelli. It is with him.
Yeah.
Because he just lied. And this is the problem, that the agreement you can make has to stick.
But you think about an agreement, Kesey, what the big boys don't like about an agreement is they like having the power. They like to be able to go and say, they don't want a salary cap. They don't want a transfer cap.
No,
because it then takes away their power over the others.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. That they and I'm talking about the big boys.
Yeah.
Listen, Project Big Picture, we talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to you at the time, there are many things in it I thought that were really good.
Mm-hmm.
Good FA Cup replays. Yeah. We didn't need Carabao Cup ties for the big boys. We don't want that. Straight to penalties, 90 minutes in cup matches. Two up, two down. Fine. Oh, no, you're killing the dreams of the clubs in the lower leagues if you shut the door on the Premier League. That's happened.
Yeah,
look who's coming back.
Not shut.
But look who's coming back.
Yeah, look who's coming back. Look who's one and two.
That's already happened through a natural process. Mm-hmm. But we were too quick. The game was too quick. English newspaper writers, influential individuals, were too quick to say, no, throw it out.
What, big picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the big guys sat down and said, okay, well, if that's not happening, let's find another way to generate some money.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, as you rightly said, they will again.
They will again.
But now is a critical time to stop the bleed.
Yes.
Stop the money going to people that shouldn't have it.
Your agents you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. You see, what I don't get as well, that people go on about the necessity of agents. I don't see the necessity for an agent. I mean, am I right in thinking that I heard or I read that somebody as famous and as popular as Kevin De Bruyne
correct, yes.
conducted his own
he did.
Negotiation with Manchester City.
With a group of lawyers and friends and advisors. Yes.
Yeah. But not paying an agent 20 million.
Is there anybody at Manchester United or Manchester City? Or Liverpool.
Or Chelsea.
Wouldn't have walked to those clubs to sign for them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. If somebody says to Jack Grealish, here's one, who's playing at Aston Villa, somebody comes from Manchester City next week, calls Villa and says, listen, we want to pay you 100 million for Jack Grealish, right? That's the clubs talking to each other, saying chairman to chairman, owner to owner, we're prepared to pay you 100 million for Jack Grealish, Aston Villa. What do you think? Let's get back to you half an hour later. Yes, we think that's a fair offer for Jack. You're allowed to talk to him.
I'm not sure half an hour would lapse.
No, I know it wouldn't. But you know what I mean? What I'm saying is...
How much?
You can... Yes. You have our permission to talk to Jack Grealish.
Yes.
They pick up the phone and they say, Jack, we've had an offer accepted on you. Or Villa phone and say, we've had an offer accepted. You've got our permission to talk to Manchester City.
Mm.
What then is wrong with Jack Grealish meeting Manchester City with... So a lawyer, whoever, to make sure everything's all right, right? But not an agency, not phone up, say, right, my agent, Jack here, listen, we had a great job. On you go, get up to Manchester City, do my deal. And how much are you wanting? 10 million? Done. Well done. Get on. And he goes and says to him, that 100 million is now 110 because I want 10 million for my partner. What part? You're just sitting in a room and saying yes to everything we're going to say.
Well, the agent is Jonathan Barnett, who, of course, took Gareth Bale to Real Madrid and subsequently to Tottenham on loan this season. So he knows his way around a big deal.
Of course he does.
He certainly does. But one thing I think it's really important to stress is that the noise, I think, probably was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it didn't stop anything. Let's not get carried away and believe that that was the case. The one thing that stopped this happening was that the aforementioned NASA...
Uh-huh.
Paris and Munich said no.
You think that still? You think that,
if
that
they
was...
had said yes, this would have happened. Make absolutely no mistake about that.
Wow.
So it was quite literally NASA, the man from the small state of Qatar, who as we know, have been in everybody's sights since the award of the World Cup, who said no, football can do better than this. And he was unshakable.
Yeah.
He would not join the breakaway.
Yeah.
Andy, had he done so, honestly, those two clubs were enough to make this work. And the European Super League would have been formed. The noise counted for nothing in that respect. Would have counted for nothing.
Well, that would have been the five big leagues represented in Europe for that Super League.
Yes.
The five biggest leagues. Championship, might argue, but
so
the five biggest leagues.
As unpopular as it is to give Qatar any credit at any time for anything, I think those that have criticised hugely this... nation state should think again and thank Nasser.
Well, thank goodness a couple of big clubs did stand up and say no.
His problem now is to bring everybody back together, like I said, around a table and find a strategy for football that means that the money that's currently being generated, never mind how much more might, the money that's currently being generated is used better.
Yeah.
And that would make a big change.
If a bank was bleeding money like the Premier League bleeds money, there would be 3,000 redundancies. Staff would be trimmed. So wages would be capped.
I think any other business, Andy, would shut. You can't lose money at this rate.
But do you think, right, we've watched this Premier League grow for the last 20 plus years to where it is now. Do you honestly believe if somebody walked into a top player, and this is the part of the problem, I think, somebody walked into, say, let's say Paul Pogba, who's negotiating, I think, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into United, and United come to him and say, Paul, you know, football's got to get its house in order, or otherwise it's just going to bankrupt itself. Probably is, close to. So in that case, we're starting now, and here's the first contract we've dealt with. It might not be great, but we can't pay you $500,000 a week. I'm going to say these figures, and it's just, even that is going to sound absolutely ridiculous.
It's money that people don't earn in a lifetime.
We can only pay you, we're only going to pay you $250,000. It's going to be our maximum wage for anybody. $250,000, that's $1 million a month. Have I just said that?
Mm-hmm.
how can anyone live in $1 million a month?
Some are talking about, and I did last week, £1 million a week footballer. Yeah. And that may happen.
But if Paul Pogba gets that message from United, and everyone, and if all the clubs are not in tandem with it, and all the clubs are not, haven't bought into it, he's just going to go, really? Okay. Agent, call Real Madrid. Barcelona.
This is why Italy. I say that we need to have an agreement that sticks between these clubs. Otherwise, the reckless numbers that you're talking about will continue to rise, and football will end up.
As long as people keep being prepared to pay it easy, the people that own these clubs are not stupid. They haven't earned all their money by being idiots.
No.
You know, they've earned it because they're clever, really clever, and they're really clever with money. And yet, somehow, when they go to a football club, all that seems to go out a window. It's just ridiculous.
Well, that doesn't apply anymore. But many years ago, I remember the question that was asked many times: how do you make a small fortune out of football?
Yeah.
Start with a big one. Yeah. Well, these days that doesn't apply, but it's going to again if they're not careful, because it's unsustainable, and they've realised it's unsustainable, which is why they're looking around for other revenue streams now, and are absolutely desperate in some cases.
Well, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Real Madrid,
desperate is the word that comes, and it's right. I mean, they can't go forward.
In
these circumstances.
Well, they're two are different, aren't they? When you look at them, they're different. They're made up differently from the Premier League clubs, and who have the backing of huge, rich individuals.
That's what they're saying, isn't it? The German model's perhaps the one to chase, where an owner can only have 49% of the shares, and the rest are spread around amongst the supporters. Listen, I great message received, I think. But that you can't now be confronting your own players and your own club.
No.
Sports people, Guardiola, Klopp, there were a few that came out. Milner understood that the integrity of competition is paramount. It was not them, so there's no point confronting them at training grounds or wherever else you feel might.
You're right.
Enough.
The fans should understand. Yes, if they're unhappy with their owners, fine. Voice your opinions on your owners, that's great. But your coaches, your managers, your players, the staff at the football clubs are absolutely innocent and are not guilty of any wrongdoings of any description. No underhand stuff has been done by any of them, as far as I can see.
No.
And, you know, what worries me is talk of sanctions on the Big Six. Now, when you sanction the Big Six, the way I'm here listening today, points deductions, let's do this.
It's nonsense.
It's absolutely nonsense. You cannot do that. That only hurts the people who have done no wrong. That only hurts the players. That only hurts the staff. That doesn't hurt the owner's pockets.
I think it was Gary, wasn't it, Neville, who said, cancel the Carabao Cup final.
Why?
Relegate these clubs. Take titles off them. Well, that just stirs the mob. And it's nonsense. It can't happen. It won't happen. It wasn't going to happen. You just have to accept that mistakes were made.
Yes.
And we now need to get together and find a way forward that does suit everybody.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, the clubs that make the money and it's not Brighton, that's not Burnley, that's not Sheffield United, it's not West Brom, we wouldn't be paying in this part of the world.
The league needs the big six, innit?
Of course it does. We wouldn't be paying the money we do for the rights if these guys weren't in that league. So let's be sensible.
That's true. You know, the six teams they're talking about, I don't think arguably, are the six best supported clubs in the Premier League. Mm. Worldwide.
Yeah.
I don't think there's another club would get into it. Everton, maybe no.
The owners will continue to try to look to expand into China and into India and into territories where they feel there is still a lot of money to be made, and they would be right. Mm-hmm. But it's a question of now doing it in a way that is certainly more popular and correct than the model that we were served last week. Shall we speak to someone else who doubtless will have something to say on this subject?
Don't worry. Not again. Can we let him not just speak about it, just speak about him? Well,
last week's podcast, when Tony Pulis was with us and shared that wonderful story,
yes.
We need to confirm, was it the case that Gianfranco Zola,
yes.
when the manager of West Ham,
yes.
before a game against Stoke at Upton Park, mm-hmm. went and apologised to the manager and said, look, they brought all the hoardings in around the penalty box.
Stop your long throw.
And Gianfranco apparently said, well, look, it wasn't me.
I'm really sorry. it was somebody higher up.
So now is the time
yes.
to immediately confirm or dispute, as we say, once again, a very warm welcome to the Keys and Gray podcast to our mate, Gianfranco Zola. Gianfranco, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, Richard. Thank you very much for asking me. I'm very, very good. Thank you.
And where are you right now? Are you in your beautiful island of Sardinia?
No, actually, I came back to England a week ago, so I'm here at home in England.
All right, so you'll have seen all the immense trouble your team got into.
It seems to me many teams are in trouble at the moment.
What do you make of it all, Jan?
Well, like everyone, you know, it's not very happy about the news, and you know, I realize a lot of clubs are in trouble, but this is not a solution to find the problem, because I think going into this new Super League, it was really going to create a lot of problems to the other leagues. Personally, I think it was going to kill all the other leagues, and you know, so my reaction was everyone's else. So I wasn't very happy about that. Many, many years ago, I remember when I was still playing, they were going around these rumors, and they did ask me if I was in favor of a Super League, kind of. And I always thought it was not going to be good, and I still think the same, considering also that there are problems. These big clubs, they're having problems, but again, I think this is not a solution.
No, the one thing I think, Jan, that was very clear last week, and in discussing this with Andy before you joined us, I said that sportsmen who understand the integrity of competition to a man were against this, weren't they?
No, absolutely. It's, you know, it's not good because it's like, you know, you're taking the possibility to... one of the most important things is that when the people approach this game, they dream. They dream yes, that absolutely. They're going to be playing against Andy Gray. They're going to be playing against Richard Keys.
No. You could have stopped after the first name, Jan. Come on.
No. On a serious note, I think that is what has made football so popular around the world. That anyone can, with hard work, with obviously combinations of luck and other things, he can become somebody. And this is what I think football is, is the main power of football. It is accessible to anyone. I think if you do something like that, it kind of closing down football for very few people, and you lose something. And I honestly think that as far as I can think, at least, you know, it's not going to do any benefit. On a long term, I seriously think that it's going to be also penalizing these big clubs that they're going into this league. There is no doubt, because it's like they're going to be in time missing support. That's what I think. In my opinion, it's like professionals. Professionals in any sport are very important, okay? Because they are the elite of the elite. But without the amateurs, professionals wouldn't be there. They wouldn't have a reason to exist. And this is what many years ago they've been doing against amateur football. You know, by televising every game, by televising the game at the same time as the amateurs they play, in a way, in my opinion, they penalize all the amateur football. And it has caused some problems to, in my opinion, to the system. That's how I see it.
Well, thank you. Yes, I think the message loudly received, yes. Jan, as it was by so many others. Listen, in all the time that we've known you and enjoyed your company, one thing that actually we haven't discussed, speaking of dreaming, what was it like getting your football education in and around Diego Maradona?
Well, that was massive. Absolutely massive. Because obviously I do believe that as a kid, we grow up looking up to people, no?
And yes. Well, in your case, Jan, all of your life,
yes,
I think
you're always looking up. Yes. I can't think of too many footballers you've looked down upon. Come on.
I knew exactly. I exposed myself to counterattack as soon as I said that. I should have used another expression. But on a serious note, yes, we learn by imitating people. Okay, and in my case was exactly that. I mean, I grew up in a small town and. You know, I grew up on the might of big players. Obviously, Maradona was the biggest of all. And when I found myself playing with him, you know, it was amazing. And, you know, every training station for me was a discovery. And I was very lucky because I went to play with him that I was very young. And also, I went to play in Napoli from a very small team. So my attitude was very good. I went there with the attitude to learn, to, you know, no matter whether I was playing or not playing, the important thing was to get better every day, and you know, playing alongside that player was a treasure for me.
Did you inherit his jersey? Did you become 10?
Yes.
Did you become what?
Number 10.
Yes, I did.
Wow, what pressure.
Did you ask for that, Jan? Did you ask for his jersey when he
No,
left?
I didn't.
Oh, I was going to say,
no,
it was a big jersey to fill that, wasn't it?
Well, it was a huge jersey. No, I didn't ask for that, to be honest. Of course, I knew that when Maradona left, you know, the responsibility and also playing regularly, with that responsibility also, they come also a lot of good things. And then because Maradona left the place, and so I was indicated as the successor. But honestly, I was very I wasn't happy he was leaving, because my dream was to, you know, keep playing along with him, along with Careca, you know, to keep you know, having fun, because every game played with those two was such a fun, was such a an experience. So I did want him to stay, and I did want him to carry on using his shirt, but it wasn't the case. And he was very, very kind towards me, because in one game that we played against Pisa, he turned up to the training ground, to the stadium with us, and he said, "No, today I don't want to play number 10. I want to play number 9. Wow, I couldn't believe anyone couldn't believe, because Maradona never did something like that. And so at the end of the game, I went to him and I say, Diego, thank you very much indeed. I had also my tears coming from the, and I said, Diego, thank you very much. That was so kind of you. I really appreciate it. You are a great person, a great player. And he said to me, hey, because he used to call me Midget, he said, Midget, I didn't do that for you. I did that because I wanted to use Careca's. I wanted to use Careca's shirt, not because I wanted to leave my tent to you. And it's just like somebody had kicked me straight into the point.
What a great story.
Brilliant. It's good.
Brilliant. You came to English football aged what, 29?
30 almost.
30,
that.
Was
yes,
it?
Yeah.
And yet went on to establish yourself. And I think rightly as well, but modern day supporters of Chelsea still speak about you being the greatest ever. So you've done that across a decade from 29. I mean, could you have imagined the success that you would have when you joined at that age?
Yeah, well, no, I couldn't imagine that, obviously. I was going through difficulties in Italy, and obviously for me to go to Chelsea was a blessing because I found the right conditions for me to, you know, carry on. Mm-hmm. And actually, I got to say, Richard, it was an experience, and playing the Premier League made me better, without doubt. I matured. I learned to play in another culture, another type of football, and so that forced me to adapt my game to the Premier League, and it was very good. Seriously, I think that that experience made them a much more better player than I was before.
Yeah, I remember when you arrived, Gian. About what was that? About 96? Was it 96? Ish, roughly.
Yeah, exactly. 96.
Yeah, 96.
96.
I can remember, 96. Obviously, the Premier League 4 years into its inception, and it was regarded as a powerful league, a strong league, a physical league, where strength and fitness were paramount to be able to have success. But here were you, almost 30, 5'4", 7 stone, walking into this power league. Did it not scare you in any way? Did it not worry you in any way? Or did you just say, no, I'm good enough, I'm going to show you?
Well, there is a picture on the, I don't remember what was the newspaper, but it's the day after I played in my first game in Blackburn for Chelsea. Yeah. And there is a picture where you can see I'm upside down. So my feet and my head is down, is pointing down to the ground, and he says, "Welcome to the
Premier League."
he still makes me laugh, that picture. But I think, Andy, yes, the Premier League at that time was very, very physical. Yeah. The majority of the games they were playing with a lot of intensity, a lot of aggressiveness. But it was the league. And the challenge for me was to be successful in that type of league. So I had to think about my game. I had to find the ways to use my quality. I knew everything about my qualities. Yes. I knew that my qualities were, if they were good in Italy, they were going to be good in England too. Yeah. I just needed to be flexible. I needed to play differently, but it worked very well because I learned, I learned the strength of the English football, but also I learned some of the, weaknesses where I could use my strength in there. So I start to learn to move in between lines in those days. I played not to play never on the defense line, not to play on the midfield line, but play in between, receive the ball there. And that was very important because it gave me an edge sometimes with the defenders, and it was very important.
Here's one that we have discussed, but not on this platform. The goal against Norwich, the cup goal. That we probably, when we think about Gianfranco Zola, that's the one that comes to mind. But you had no idea what you'd done, had you, when that goal went in?
No.
How can that be?
I don't know, Richard. But believe it or not, I finished the game and I didn't know how I scored until I saw it in the evening at my house. Well, I had an idea. Obviously, I knew a kind of knew what I was doing, but obviously, I didn't realize how good I hit the ball and where the ball went in. But these are one of those things that I always keep saying. No, it's when you know, when you trust yourself and you follow your instinct, sometimes you have an extra gear. And I've always had it since I was a young boy. Sometimes also I got a lot of times told off my teammates because I was trying to do things that maybe yes. were better to be done easily. But there was, you know, I never listened to that. There were moments in the games when I said, well, I think this is the right thing, and I do, and I don't think about the consequences. I just do that. And to be honest, 8 times out of 10, you know, I've been always right when I did so.
You share, in my opinion, a number of qualities that I saw in Ray Wilkins, Jan. Uh-huh. Yeah. Charming man, really good player. And by the way, still miss Ray yeah. to this day, probably more now than ever I did. But I always said of Ray, yeah. and I think it's true of yourself, that you couldn't have been the success you were unless there was an aggressive side to you, an instinct to want to win. And occasionally in Ray, you would see that. His eyes absolutely. Would change yeah, yeah, and he would get quite angry. In your... Is that the same with you? Deep down? I mean, this gloss of being the lovely guy you are, there's got to be a nasty side.
Well, I mean, you played with me, golf with me for a few times. You should know that better than anybody.
Well, when you say we've played golf with you, we've beaten you many times on the golf course. I think that's what you're trying to say.
As I kicked your backside so many times, you should never realize it. No, I mean. Having said that, when you go out there, you got to be competitive.
Yes.
A competitor. You got to win, want to win all the time. It's a rule. Of course, you have to be honest. You have to be, and I try to be honest, and I try to be friendly and gently to people. But when I'm out there, I'm competing, and when I'm competing, there is only one way I wanna get out from that pitch, and I wanna get out by being the winner. There is not other way. There is absolutely a dark side. If you want to call that.
Yeah, well, it's hard to find a description, Jan, but you know what I'm saying. A competitive side yes. to you.
Yeah, competitive, that's the right way. Yeah. I mean, you can describe it many ways. Let's use competitor. You have to be a competitor. And, yeah. Because, you know, when you are competing to the high levels, you got skills, but they got skills. You got physique, and the others have got physique. So, in order to win, to prevail, you have to have more. You need to want that victory more than the others.
Yeah, does that apply? Does that apply on the golf course, Jan? You know, can you use things like, you know, when you know you test somebody's mental strength when you're playing golf by occasionally having a chat with them? You know,
well, I probably should add a little bit to that before Jan answers, because he was very patient with us.
He was very patient.
At big moments, he may have heard us talking about
yes.
a putt, for instance, that he was over.
Yes.
Or a drive, maybe, that we were hoping would land somewhere other than where he wanted
it.
And after about 5 or 6 rounds, he came out, and forgive my accent, he came out and he's on the first tee, and he said, "Not
you're
talking."
talking.
Well, that is a mistake I'm never gonna make when I play against you. I discovered the power of the, you know, those things that you put in your ear and you can listen to the music and you don't listen to the outside.
Yeah. I did offer him, in fairness, and this underlines again the competitor in him, I did offer him a halved match at one point.
Did.
Do you remember?
Well, I remember it very well. You had a 25-foot putt on the last.
Yes.
Jan was 10 feet away.
Yes.
It was his one chance of winning.
Correct.
He hadn't won anything in five matches against us. So we kindly said, would you like a half?
Yes.
You offered it up, even... And Jan looked at the two putts and thought, "Yeah, I'm getting this. We're winning today." So he said, "No, thank you, Richard. No half." So you subsequently rolled your putt in from 30 feet. Jan missed his, and the game is won.
Andy, you know that there is a saying in England that he says even a blind squirrel can find a nut occasionally.
On St. George's Day, it's lovely to hear you have adopted many of our sayings.
We haven't asked him.
What? No, we're going to. We're going to. No, I'm leaving the last question, the big question to last.
Right. Well,
now,
good.
Jan, thank you, first of all, for joining us today. It's been brilliant. But we can't let you go without confirming a story that we heard last week when Tony Pulis was with us. He said he once took a team, Stoke, to West Ham, Upton Park, when you were in charge, and somebody at the football club moved all the advertising hoardings pitch side so that Rory Delap couldn't use his long throw. Now, can you confirm this for us? And if you can... would you mind telling us who that was?
Who made that decision?
Yes. Yes.
there is inside information. There is a leak. There is a leak. Well, let's put it this way. We couldn't lose that game. It was so important. We need to do something about that, and I didn't say this. It's not me saying that. It's somebody. Okay, officially we said that there was a request from the sponsors to be closer to the ground. Okay.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. You see, where's that single-mindedness
sometimes,
you were after?
Sometimes you have to use all your tricks in your bag. I hope Tony didn't mind that.
Tony speaks very affectionately of you and that particular incident. But when I texted Jan last week, Andy, and said, "Could you come and join us?" And, you know, we've just spoken with Tony. One of the messages I got was, "Tell Tony football is played with the feet, not your hands." It's been brilliant, my little friend. Now, are you? Go on.
Go on. No, I was saying, Tony, honestly, you know, because we came across a few times and I always ended up drinking a glass of wine.
He's one of the
nicest person I played, you know, after the match. I spent time with after the match. Very, very nice. Very, very good.
He is a good guy. Now, what are you doing? I mean, like Andy, I thought you were in Sardinia. Yeah. Plainly not then. You're back in London. But what are you doing with your life going forward? Surely you're going to have another go at it, aren't you, management?
I decided to take a little bit of space because the last two experiences, you know, they were not what I was expecting for. But I think they're going to be another go.
Good.
I think there is unfinished business.
Yeah.
And but at the moment, my focus is on other things, very important for me and for my family as well. So I will spend a little bit more time in this.
By the way, if you now you're in London, if you need a motorbike to get around in, Richard and I have got one here, a nice second-hand one. We found it somewhere.
It's a good point.
Yes. So
it's a little dusty, Jan.
It's a little dusty.
But it is still here.
Treat it well, please. Waiting for me.
It's been lovely catching up. Please, yeah. Please give our best wishes to the fragrant Mrs. Zola,
yes.
who on one occasion underlined how good her English was.
Yes.
When Jan was entertaining his family in the desert.
In the Christmas Day.
Christmas Day. And what he hadn't bargained for was the weather.
Yeah, it was the only Christmas Day in 100 years of Qatar history. It rained.
And as he removed the last soggy sausage off the barbecue, Mrs. Zola looked at him, and in her finest in English, she said, "Jan, this is a fiasco."
Oh, gosh. I'll never forget that day.
Neither will we, Jan.
Again, Jan, thank you. Really good. Really, really good to catch up.
Thank you.
We'll stay in touch.
Really enjoyed. Pleasure. Take care. See you soon. Ciao, guys. Bye bye.
The motorbike story, actually, Jan, when he was with us in Qatar, would go, and I've no idea why. The roads here are interesting.
Yes.
Perhaps.
A test.
Yes, a test.
A test.
I would not ride a motorbike.
Nor me.
In this part of the world. I really wouldn't. But Jan did. Mm-hmm. And occasionally would leave it outside of his house.
Which you lived across the road from.
I did. And I did try and encourage one or two, including yourself, to lift it and hide it at different times. But I have to say, it was a weighty old thing.
It was massive. Yes, and it had a wheel lock on it, so we couldn't push it either. It was a nightmare. But we did attempt to hide it on many occasions.
which I would have loved to have done. But he's just a lovely, lovely guy,
he
is. Isn't he?
Yes.
And I'm pleased to say that he's coming back in management in some
form.
Chelsea didn't work as he would have wanted.
No.
Under Sarri. Must have been a really difficult time. And obviously the Birmingham experience.
Birmingham thing wasn't good for him.
Scarred
now.
Him a touch as well. Listen, but then nobody's had any success at Birmingham.
Lots of coaches are entitled to, you know, have a couple of hard times to get things going.
Yeah.
Look at David Moyes. David had a couple of ones, maybe in Spain, maybe at Sunderland, where people go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, can he come back?" Look at him now at West Ham.
So, thank you for listening. As I always say, please tell others now that you've found us. There was an expression last week, or a number of people saying, "Wow, where have you been? We haven't been anywhere. We're working for BeIN Sports."
Have you been?
When we left Sky, I did 2 years on the radio at Talk Radio, Talk Sport, which was great fun. And this podcast is here every week. Just subscribe and it will download automatically from wherever you get your pods from.
Excellent.
And you can get in touch with us at Keys and Grey Pod. That's right.
Yeah.
I've said it so many times. I'm just confused myself. That is good. Yeah. That's on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for your company. We'll speak again next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.